Testimony is over for the first week in the trial of now admitted Boston Marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev. A long line of victims and first responders have already taken the stand. David Boeri from Here and Now contributor WBUR reports that the defense so far is contesting nothing and a warning that David's report contains graphic descriptions that may not be suitable for everyone.
On the first day, the jurors had been like soldiers hitting the beach in battle. What they saw and heard of shrapnel, shredded flesh, and amputated legs on the day of April 15th, 2013 had shocked them. By day two, the jurors had to know what they were in for. They could well understand one witness's description that what happened had looked like a war movie. "Your knee joint is something that anyone who has two legs takes for granted," testified bombing victim Roseanne Soya. She had walked into the courtroom on two prosthetic legs with a side-to-side gait of one whose legs have been cut off above the knee. After watching the Red Sox game at Fenway Park, she had gone to see the marathon. Her life changed forever with two flashes of white light she saw at her feet. "All I could see was blood pouring out of where my knee should have been," Soya said. She described seeing a little foot on the ground with a sock on it, next to where she was lying. "I had to ask," she said, "if I had put socks on that morning and whether it was mine." Knowing she was bleeding out, Soya said she gave someone her sister's phone number because "I didn't want somebody calling my parents to say I was dead." A fellow amputee, Rebecca Gregory, cried openly, and during the day at least four jurors trembled, shuddered, and welled up. The jurors clearly liked these witnesses. There was Jeffrey Bowman, the focus of the photo that became an icon of the carnage and heroism that day. He sits in a wheelchair, lower legs missing, a medic and a man in a cowboy hat pushing frantically. Resolutely upbeat, Bowman told the prosecutor that Erin, the girlfriend who he had gone to see run that day, was now his wife. "She said yes," he said, and the jurors had a rare and thankful moment of laughter. "I was thinking, I've had a great life. I kind of made peace with myself," he said, while he was preparing for death. When he woke up in a hospital room, Bowman exclaimed, "I saw the kid. I knew what happened." Bowman testified that before the first blast, he had seen someone who looked very suspicious, someone who was alone with a backpack that he left unattended before it blew up. Bowman had even had his breathing tube removed so he could talk with investigators and help them draw a suspect sketch of the man who turned out to be Tamerlan Tsarnaev. Bowman would leave the stand with the same swaying gait that indicated he too lost his legs above the knee. Like all the other witnesses over 2 days, he went unquestioned by defense attorneys.
"I mean, there's nothing you can do with these witnesses."
Attorney Robert Sheketoff defended Gary Sampson, who was charged with two carjacking murders in a death penalty case before the federal court here in Boston. "There is no chance of Tsarnaev winning the case," Sheketoff says, "and no way of defending against these victim witnesses."
"It's not like you can make this go away. You can't make this go away no matter what your strategy is."
The defense dares not question such sympathetic witnesses in front of the jury, so it's likely there will be no defense on most of the charges. But why not plead guilty? Why not get it over with and move to the sentencing phase of the trial? Because, Sheketoff says, it's important to give an angry jury a chance to agree with the government in a case you can't win.
"If you let them say he's guilty, at least they got to make a public pronouncement. It's good for them psychologically. It then puts them in a better psychological position to be fairer sentencing."
That, Sheketoff says, may be the hope the defense has for saving the life of Tsarnaev, who seemed a small, disconnected figure in the courtroom, dwarfed by stories of human tragedy, heroism, and transcendent grace. Boston police officer Lauren Woods testified about attending to BU graduate student Lindsay Liu. When an EMT stopped doing chest compressions, telling Woods that Liu wasn't going to make it, and he had to move on to other victims, Woods continued. She found Lou's ID, and keeping eye contact, she called her by name. "Lindsay, stay with us." With tears in her eyes, Woods explained that later they had to take the dead young woman off a backboard to make it available for someone else who was alive. The day ended with the story of Martin Richard, perhaps the emblematic face of youth lost at the marathon. With almost eerie self-control, Bill Richard told of the Hobson's dilemma of a father with three children and a wife, all taken out by the horrifying hurricane-like blast captured by a surveillance camera at the Forum restaurant. In one arm, he carried his older son. In the other, his daughter Jane, who was missing part of her leg. They had to try to save Jane, he told his wife, who was lying on the street. Behind him, Bill Richard left his 8-year-old son, Martin. I just knew from what I saw that there was no chance. Of such testimony, there will likely be much more for jurors who no doubt are thankful for an end to the week. I'm David Boeri from the Federal Courthouse in Boston.
Well, if you want to hear more about the trial, you can check out a new podcast from WBUR and the Boston Globe. It's called Finish Line, Inside the Boston Marathon Bombing. You can find a link at hereandnow.org or go to iTunes and search for Finish Line to subscribe.